Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast by Opus Partners. I'm your host, Stephen Knight.
And I'm Andrew Nicol.
And today on the show, we're talking about the cost of living and inflation. So we had new inflation data come out last week. What does it mean for you and your interest rates? Well, the first thing to know is that inflation came out at 4%. Now, that is slightly higher than what the Reserve Bank thought it was going to be. They thought about 3 months ago, when they put out their latest monetary policy statement, that it would be about 3.8%. And so they weren't too far off, but it did come in slightly higher, basically what all of the economists were predicting. Now, there's good news and bad news in this. The good news is that inflation is way down from its peak. And you've got to sometimes step back to see how far we've come. Now, two-ish years ago, inflation was sitting at 7.3%. So we've already come down 3.3 percentage points from the absolute peak. Now, we're sitting at 4%. Where do we need to go? We want to get back to the midpoint of the Reserve Bank's target band. We're aiming for 2%. But if you're thinking about, okay, we peaked at 7.3, we've got to come down to 2%. Where are we within our journey? Well, we're about two-thirds of the way there because we've come down 3.3%. We've got another 2% to go. And so although there's some bad news we're going to look at, if you just think about it over a multi-year period, actually, things are definitely going in the right direction. This is the closest we've been to that target midpoint in a couple of years, and that's a really good thing. But Andrew, there was some bad news in the inflation data. What was that?
Yeah, if you look at the breakdown of how inflation's made up, domestic inflation is still really, really high. So the inflation here is really, really high. And our imported inflation, the inflation that is affected by overseas, that's low and it's dragging the overall number down. Now, the concern is that domestic inflation isn't coming down fast enough. And that's really the only thing that the Reserve Bank can control through the OCR. Now, the risk is that they might increase the OCR or keep it higher for longer in order to get domestic inflation down. Now, my question, I've got two questions for you. Number one is, does that mean that the OCR being so high isn't working?
Oh, you're going to ask them one at a time?
Yeah, question number
one. People think that I'm doing a year and not listening. That's actually a really good question. So there's been a bit of a debate in economist circles recently about this because some of the things that are pushing inflation up at the moment are things like rates increases. So from your local council, I think there was an increase in tobacco and cigarette prices, which came from changes in taxes. There are big changes in rents and also insurance prices. Now, all of those things are not really controlled by the OCR, right? Like the council wasn't sitting there saying, oh, should we increase our rates based on what's happening with monetary policy? What they're actually doing is saying, we've got these additional costs coming up. We need to increase our rates. If you think about insurance companies, why are they putting their prices up? It's because they are adjusting their premiums based on the perceived risks of climate events. If you think about rents, why are rents going up? Well, it's not really about interest rates. It's about increasing incomes and then also the increase in net migration, the increase in the population from people moving here. So there's this kind of debate about saying, okay, we've got some inflation. A lot of it's domestic, but maybe it's not controlled by monetary policy. So I wouldn't look at this data and say, oh, OCR increases are not working because things like food prices are a lot more under control. That's what is influenced by the OCR.
So then my next question is, you'd previously said on a podcast that the Reserve Bank doesn't so much care about what's imported and what's domestic. They look at the overall inflation rate. So why does it really matter that our domestic inflation is still remaining sticky?
Yeah, I always hate it when you quote something that I've said previously on a podcast and I think, oh, that's a good question. So that is true in part, right? Because domestic inflation is usually higher than imported inflation, what's called tradable inflation. And that usually doesn't bother the Reserve Bank. So if I take you back to September 2016, imported inflation was negative 2.1%, domestic inflation was positive 2.5%, it averaged out at about 1.3% inflation. And that's because it's not a simple average. Domestic inflation is usually more heavily weighted. So in that case, domestic inflation was much higher than imported inflation, but the net result was 1.3%. That's below the Reserve Bank's target of 2%. And so they're within the target band. That doesn't really bother them, that domestic inflation is much higher than imported inflation. The issue is that today, imported inflation is 1.6%. Domestic inflation is really high, 5.8%, and it averages out at 4%. So the fact that there is a difference between imported inflation and domestic inflation, that is expected, that is normal. The question is, what does it average out at? And the other thing I've been thinking about is, how much farther can imported inflation fall? So it's currently at 1.6%. For imported inflation to do the full job of getting the overall cost of living increase back to that target band, it would have to fall quite substantially. And so I think the Reserve Bank's probably looking at this saying, we can't rely on the rest of the world to beat inflation for us. Maybe we've got some more work to do. And the real issue here is that they thought domestic inflation would fall to 5.3%. It came out at 5.8%. It was higher than expected. So my question for you is, what do you think all of that means for the potential of interest rate cuts?
So I guess on the face of it, it means that the Reserve Bank could keep rates higher for longer, and it could be a bad thing for our interest rates.
But it really depends how the Reserve Bank reads this data. One mistake that a lot of economists make, myself included, is that we react to each data release as it comes. So we look at this inflation release and we think, oh my God, what does this mean? But what the Reserve Bank does every 6 weeks or 3 months is they take a step back, they look at all of the data releases and say, what is the overall picture? And I remember previously there was some data coming out, ANZ saying, oh, the OCR is going to go up to 6%. You know, things are looking really bad. And then the Reserve Bank governor said, oh yeah, we're going to leave the OCR where it is because there was some bad stuff, but there was some good stuff. Now, if you cherry pick all of the bad stuff, the situation looks really bad. If you cherry pick all of the good stuff, all the good data, then the situation looks really good. So we've got to look at it in its entirety. And one comment that I saw from BNZ, the head of research, Stephen Topless, he was saying, well, as I said before, some of these are actually one-off increases, things like insurance or rates or tobacco taxes. None of that's impacted by the Reserve Bank. They're more one-off increases. And I mean, it's funny how inflation's made up. Did you know that overseas accommodation, if you buy it over here, that actually impacts our inflation rate?
So if I buy a trip to Bali now with my credit card here while I'm in New Zealand, that affects our inflation.
Yeah.
So if I've got a pent-up holiday fund because I haven't been on holiday for the last couple of years, all of a sudden that's going to impact our inflation.
Only if the Bali hotel is increasing their prices.
Right.
And so one thing that I thought was quite interesting, one of the Westpac economists was saying, oh, well, maybe Taylor Swift has pushed up Australian accommodation prices and that has contributed to some of our inflation. Now, the Reserve Bank's OCR change isn't going to impact that because it would be tradable. But it's quite funny when you think about what is our cost of living made up of. Maybe that's going to be a one-off. I thought it was quite fascinating.
We should ban Taylor Swift. And actually, this brings back a comment that I read on Facebook the other day, and then a subsequent post in the newspaper where Ross Barnett was actually asking, how come the Reserve Bank and the banks rely on such old data? So if the Reserve Bank's looking at data from this quarter but comparing it to last year and then annualising it out, isn't that data that's, say, a year old? And then we've said on the show before that it takes, I think, 18 months to get 80% of the effect of an OCR change. We're using old data, plus we're using a mechanism that takes a long time to trickle down. Isn't this a really slow ship to turn?
It's a good question, but the short answer is no. And the reason is because people don't realise that inflation is seasonal, right? So if you just look at the most recent quarter, inflation was 0.6%, right? And if you annualise that, you say, oh, well, maybe inflation's only 2.6%. And then if you look at the last quarter, which was December, quarterly inflation was 0.5%. You annualise it, it's about a 2% inflation rate. So you say, oh, well, maybe the Reserve Bank has already beaten inflation. But then you go back to September and quarterly inflation was 1.8%. If you annualise that, inflation was 7.3%. And if you annualise the quarter before that, you get to 4.3%. And so the reason we look at an annual figure is that the September quarter tends to be our most inflationary. So if you average it out for the last, how many years have I got? If you average it out since the start of the millennium, the year 2000, on average, September quarters have about 0.3% more inflation than the June quarter or the December quarter. And so it's not like every single quarter or every 3 months we have the same amount of inflation. No, some quarters have more inflation than others. So if you only look at it on a quarterly basis and annualise it, you're going to get a really bad picture of what inflation looks like over a year. And so I think that's what some people clearly miss. So I understand people trying to, I'm going to call it cherry pick the data and say, oh, maybe there's not a problem. Maybe the Reserve Bank's doing the wrong thing. But we've got to be intelligent about understanding that, you know, we don't look at the winter temperatures and think that that's what's going to be the same temperature for the rest of the year. Same with real estate sales. We recently did a podcast show that property prices tend to increase most in, I think it was February and November. We don't look at the February or November house price increases, annualize it, and say, oh my God, house prices going up by 12% a year, because we know that house prices aren't going to go up as much once we head to the end of autumn. So we've got to think about the seasonal effect. How does inflation move over a year? Well, actually, we can't just look at it on a quarter-by-quarter basis because we've got more inflation in March and September, and we tend to have less inflation in June and December. Right, let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, I wanted you to come to my upcoming webinar. It is on Tuesday, the 14th of May, usual time, 7 p.m. We're going to talk about how you can build a $100,000 passive income plan in just 52 minutes. So come along. It's going to be a great lot of fun. And it's amazing how we will spend so much time, Andrew, watching Netflix. I'm talking about myself here. We'll spend all this time watching Netflix. And if we just spend 1 hour creating a plan for our future, it could change our entire life. It will be one of the most valuable hours you spend in a week. So if you want to come along, links down in the show notes tab. We'll swipe over the cover up. There'll be a link in there. Or just go to opuspartners.co.nz/webinar. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Steve McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicol.
We're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.